The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 19, 2014. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good evening. Well, my name is Cynthia Scott, and I'm a student here at Dharma Field. Thanks a lot for coming. I was actually thinking this morning about how I introduce myself, and I say I'm a student, and I remember when I started coming here, I would hear people introduce themselves as a student, and I thought, well, what does that mean? Like, is everybody here a student, or you have to enroll in something to become a student? And you know, I wanted to be a student because I know what a student is. A student studies, accumulates knowledge, you know, masters a subject. And there is a great curriculum here, so I enrolled in classes, and I still do, and I probably always will. But what I've learned is that's not why we're called students. At least that's not why I think of myself as a student anymore. Because what's important about our studying is studying ourselves and being students of the mind and our lives. Dogen said, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. It's kind of one of those opaque Zen-y statements. Whose meaning isn't very clear at first, if ever. And yet, the longer I'm at this, the more true that I know it is. It's not that the teachings we study aren't important, because they are, and they're beautiful and stimulating. And really, some of the most stirring material I've ever read in my life. It's just that I think what I've learned is that the reason we study the ancestors and study the teachings is not necessarily to learn their minds, but to learn our own minds. The kind of learning we do is visceral and immediate. It's not in our head. It's not about accumulating knowledge. It's about what's right in front of us and inside of us. And there's no end of opportunity to do this sort of studying. And I have found this to be especially true when we encounter obstacles, so-called obstacles in our practice, because the obstacles are the opportunity. The resistance is the liberation. Where is it that we resist practice? When does boredom arise? Where does frustration arise? Do we reject boredom? Do we reject frustration? What does resistance tell us about our desires and our preferences? What arises inside of us when we encounter a difficult teaching? Can we learn something about our grasping mind when we become frustrated with not knowing? What does knowing look like? What does it feel like? Do we come here with the expectation that practice will fix something that's wrong with us? What can we learn from our assumption that we are flawed and that we need fixing? What can we learn about ourselves by paying attention to what arises in us when we hear that we are Buddha and that we're perfect as we are? What's the laundry list that comes up that shows the world we couldn't possibly be Buddha? What do we think Buddha is? We can learn a lot just by entering the Zendo. This is where a beginner's mind is helpful, because I remember noticing everything when I first started coming here. Noticing everything. And over time, it's easy to stop noticing everything. To stop noticing when you've crossed the threshold. To stop noticing what it is to put our hands together and gesho and bow. We might look around and see who's here. Who do we want to sit next to? Who don't we want to sit next to? Is our favorite chair or our favorite cushion available? Do we need space of two cushions or chairs between us? Are we uncomfortable sitting next to just one person? What does it feel like when we sit down, whether we're on a chair or on the cushion, and our legs start to hurt, our back starts to hurt, our butt starts to hurt? Do we want to squirm? How are we with our discomfort? That's what the practice is. That's what the practice is. It's almost too simple to endure. Do we resist feeling our bodies completely when we sit down? Where do we hold back our awareness? Where do we cut off feeling what arises inside of us? And what does that holding back tell us about our likes and our dislikes? And here's the really big kahuna. Can we do all of this without scolding ourselves and without condemning ourselves and without judging ourselves and without letting that self-improvement tyrant who wants to just get in there and just tinker a little bit and just fix a little bit, can we just let that drop away and just notice? That, you know, that is the most challenging part of this practice for me, just noticing. We hear that over and over again. Just notice. That's where we find the present moment, is in the just noticing all of this as it arises. It's here in the Zendo. I mean, we can do this sort of noticing 24/7, 365. But here in the Zendo, you know, we have a very stable and supportive environment for us where we can explore our edges. Not in a therapeutic or an intellectual way, but much more deeply than that. So that when anything arises, no matter what it is, we are here for each other. That's what Sangha is. We sit with one another through whatever we need to sit through. We don't know what that is always, except that life is what life is, and so we all know some of the edges because most we experience them ourselves. And when anything arises, there's always that choice to either experience it deeply to our bones or latch on to it, you know, latch on to it and run with it. Did you all hear the horn honking at the beginning of Zazen this period? Jeez. It was just this faint thing, and I thought at first, oh my God, it's my phone. I left my phone on. I should have turned my phone on. And then I thought, no, that's a car horn. And I immediately went back to 1983, this old Mercury I had, the horn got stuck. Wah, wah. I didn't know how to get it off. And so I just got carried away completely by the sound of what I think was a horn. I don't know. It happens. And the only thing is to return to this moment. You know, that awareness arises in a flash and drops in a flash, but little bit by little bit, gradually, kind of delicately over time, we learn to just hold a little less tightly to who we are, to our preferences, our likes, our dislikes, what we think we have to be, and what we think, who we think everybody else has to be as well. I've been thinking a lot about friendship lately. I realized that entering into this practice in a spirit of friendship and inquiry is really important. Because you think about it, it's a pleasure for us to inquire after our friends. How are you? What's going on? How are you doing? Can I do anything for you? And this practice can be so challenging, I think, that we really, in a way, are in the process of befriending ourselves, just inquiring after ourselves without judgment, without expectation. What's going on? Just holding that for ourselves. Without abandoning ourselves. I worry sometimes when people come here for a little bit and then they leave. And it's not that this place is for everybody. It's not. Not everybody who comes here should stay. But I hope people don't leave because they abandon themselves. You know, we need to not abandon ourselves in this practice. And just stay. Just stay. And allow this Sangha to be kind of this womb of friendship that it is. There's a story about the Buddha and his attendant, Ananda. Ananda asked the Buddha whether having noble friends and companions wasn't half the holy life. And the Buddha's response was, "Don't say so, Ananda. Having noble friends and companions is the whole of holy life." And that's what I think we are here. That's what I think we have to be to ourselves as we engage in this practice. Just this unconditional agreement to stay for ourselves and for each other. When I get in a really foul mood and I don't want to practice, I try to remind myself, maybe somebody needs me to be there. Because we do. We need to see each other here. It's not for us. You know, we take a vow to live for the benefit of all beings, to save all sentient beings. Not out there in the world somewhere, it's right here. So I cut out a poem from a magazine like 35 years ago. I've kept it. I wanted to read it tonight, but I could not find it at home. I looked high and low. But I remember the first line of it. So I'm going to recite the first line. It goes, "It must be all right to come here as cold and empty as a dusty October pond in Montana. It must be all right to come here as cold and empty as a dusty October pond in Montana." Now, I'm from Montana originally, so I can kind of taste and smell that dusty October pond. But so can we all. Doesn't matter where we're from, right? And I think about this place We don't talk about love a lot, but I love this community. I love this community. This community is friendship. And this is a community where we can show up as cold and empty as a dusty October pond in Montana. So my hope is that we can practice as friends within ourselves and with each other. And I think that's all I want to say, except to invite you to comment or ask questions or offer anything you want to offer. I've seen you before, but I've never seen you before here, have I? Oh, good. Welcome.
So the poem that we recited, the cold and dusty Montana pond is the person that's coming there.
It's like you and Yoni are bad boots, David. That you talked about on Sunday. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Cynthia. I didn't know you were from Montana. Was it a town or was it a rural area or what was
when I grew up in Montana, back in the 1860s, it was all rural. Yeah, I grew up in a small town outside of Billings.
Okay, outside
yeah.
Billings?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. South Central.
Mountains?
Yes. Yep. It's a great place to visit. But I wouldn't want to live there. No. Mm-mm. Yeah.
When you said that we are the Buddha?
Yes. That's not a silly question. Some people spend a whole life figuring that out, right? Well, I think a simple way, I mean, there are people in this room who could answer it very well. We forget we're Buddha. I mean, Buddha means awake, right? And I don't know. I just think it's impossible for most of us to remember that unless we practice. That's what I think. I don't know. Anybody want to chime in on that? Pardon me? Yeah, it was a great question. That was the question that Dogen, the teacher that I referred to in here, That was the question that drove him. That was his burning question that sent him looking for masters and teachers and himself. I mean, it propelled his life. But I don't know if my answer did it justice. Ask 30 Buddhas and you'll probably get a different answer from each one of them. I don't know. Okay. Anything else?
What you would say, being a true student, just realizing the awareness. Interesting point you bring up about how, that idea of being a student, and they're pretty general.
Yeah, and kind of intellectually framed. I just think that being a student is much broader than the book learning we do, however important and satisfying it is. And, you know, I think to the ancestors who were illiterate. Couldn't read and write. I mean, They lived awakened lives. And I think there's a lot to learn from that. No, right. Yeah, I think it's much richer than that. And the thing that I think is really true is that it doesn't matter if somebody shows up once or always. They still, I mean, we talk about what is Dharma field. It's whoever shows up. Whoever is the Sangha at any given time. You are Dharma field as much as anybody, you know, even though it's your first time. At all. Anything else? Okay. Well, thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.